Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of 700 Level Radio. Mark Morales is back as co-host. We'll get into a little bit of everything. Flyers, we talked about them last time. We'll discuss that a little bit more. We'll throw in some Phillies, who are getting crushed right now by the Angels. Throw in some more Sixers. A little bit of the news there. And then as well as the upcoming season with the Eagles. So thanks for coming back on the show, Mark.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kyle.
So last time we were discussing mostly the Flyers, and we were talking about Nolan Patrick, the number two overall pick this year. I'm not sure what his role will be this rookie season because the Flyers have a lot of older players, but they have a lot of young talent in the minors. Their Lehigh Valley Phantoms made the playoffs last year. They lost in the first round, I believe, to Hershey. So he can definitely help them. The Phantoms were actually 48-23-5 that year, last year. And I'm not sure what Patrick's role will be, but do you think Nolan Patrick will start off in the AHL and then make it to the Flyers, or do you think he mostly is going to be in the minors this year?
Knowing Ron Hextall, he'll probably stay in the minors the whole year. Hextall doesn't like to, you know, rush people when they bring him up. That's the reason why we haven't seen like Sam Morin or Robert Hag or Sanheim or none of those guys yet. He likes to develop them in the minors before bringing them up to the major club. So, I mean, if he's absolutely crushing it, you know, I could see him coming up in the NHL, but I think he might come up next year.
Yeah, after the draft in June, he signed a 3-year entry-level contract on July 17th. I agree with you. Hextall is good. He learned from Dean Lombardi in Los Angeles when they won a couple cups there, and then Hextall came over here. He's very patient. A lot of people give him criticism towards that, but in hockey, you're not always going to get that big boom, that big signing. A lot of times it's not an overnight thing. So I think it's good that he's letting them kind of grow and develop. So with that in mind, we have Wayne Simmonds on the last year of his contract this year. He's set to make $5 million. He's been with the Flyers for a few years now. Came over from Los Angeles, and he had some injury problems the last couple of years, but he's doing really well with the Flyers. I like the way he's improved on the power play, and his goal scoring has been consistent. He's not really much in the way of points in production, but you know, that's pretty much what the upside for him is. And he's coming up on his 29th birthday. What are your expectations for Wayne Simmonds this upcoming season?
I think he's going to do pretty much the exact same thing he did last year. He's going to bring a physical game. He's going to bring a physical presence. He's going to, you know, he's going to fight. He's going to get his fair share of penalty minutes. He's going to be, you know, a big contributor in the power play too. When I see him having another 30 goal plus year. This year too as well.
Yeah, this is actually his seventh year with the Flyers. Was last year, and then he's coming up on his eighth. The last 2 years, he's had over 30 goals a year, 31 last year, and 32 the previous year. He kind of developed here in Los Angeles. He wasn't getting as much playing time, so I liked his production there. And speaking of forwards, there's been a lot of criticisms about Claude Giroux, and he had that hip surgery that last offseason. And then during the year, he only had 58 points. He was still doing really well in the power play. 2 years ago, he was second best on the power play in terms of production. And they have him, they have Couturier. They have Valtieri, Filppula, And I'm not sure where the centers in terms of depth go from there. But Claude Giroux had a really down season. Do you see him bouncing back? What do you what are your predictions for Giroux this year?
You know, if he can stay healthy, I see him hovering around like 70, maybe at the highest 80 points this year. But, you know, if he's going to be, you know, banged up and injured going into the season like he's been the last couple of years, he'll be staying around the 50, 60-point club. So it all depends if he's healthy and if, you know, he can get some supporting cast around him that will, you know, besides Lance Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just – his struggles, even strength, kind of they can be kind of frustrating because he started off 4 or 5 years ago. He led the league in points, and from 2011 to 2014, he led all NHL players at power play points with 87, and in terms of power play points per game, and that's. It was second only to Washington's Nicholas Backstrom. And obviously Backstrom has Alexander Ovechkin on the power play, but Giroux doesn't – he still has a good amount of talent. It just seems like an even strength. You know, he's not as consistent in that kind of worries me. But I don't know. We'll see what happens this year. I thought Voracek had a down year, and these are the guys that are supposed to have – impact. These are the guys that are supposed to set the tone. Now, Drew has been a good role model, but sometimes it matters on the ice, not necessarily taking your guy under the wing. And what I really would hope for is that he guides Jordan Weal, who we mentioned last time. Weal last year in the AHL with Lehigh Valley had 47 points in 43 games. And his final 7 games that year with the Flyers, he had just as many points. So I really liked his game. You had mentioned that you liked a lot as well, Jordan Weal. What did you like about his game? What impressed you the most?
I think just his, you know, he's really fast. He's got a lot of speed, and I like his hustle. You know, you see him a lot on the forecheck and, you know, getting those dirty goals or getting deep into the zone and just, you know, if he just does what he needs to do. Like, he's a grinder.
You like his skating, too?
Yeah, he's a very good skater. I think he would be good on, like, the second line.
Yeah, well, they showed it, the depth chart, and they have him on the fourth line, but they have Nolan Patrick, this is according to a website called dailyfaceoff.com. Now this is updated usually during the season, it's every day, but then on the off season it's not as common. But I don't know if they'll keep Couturier on the check-in line. It seems to be common, along with Matt Reed, who I'm not sure why they keep him. Matt Reed, they should cut all ties with him. I think he's awful offensively and defense. They seem to match him up well with Couturier and Raffle. Then on the second line, you'll have Simmons, writing Filppula and Patrick. But I think they'll keep Patrick in the minors. They still have Yuri Lettera, who they got at the in the draft in return for Braden Schenn, who obviously is not going to be in that second line, and obviously we'll have a gap on the power play in place of Schenn now, too. And on the fourth line, we also we got rid of Bellamar, too, to the draft. So now we have Dale Weiss and then Jordan Weal, who I think will kind of switch up to the second line, maybe replace Filppula, maybe Filppula will go up to the fourth line. We'll see what Hextall wants to do, but do you like Couturier in the on the checking line, on the third line with Reed, or would you like to see him get more offense this year?
I like him on the checking line. You know, he's a nice two-way player. You know, you're not going to get, like, you're not going to get 30 goals out of him a year. He might get 15 tops. He's more of like a, you know, defensive offenseman. He's great on the penalty kill. But like I said, I don't think he needs to be on the second line. I feel like your top two lines, or your two scoring lines, your checking lines, obviously your checking line, and your fourth line, I think, is just for depth. That's how I always viewed it.
And what do you think they should do with Matt Reed, who is in the final year of his contract this year, is going to make $3.5 million, and then he's an unrestricted free agent the following offseason?
What I think they should do with Matt Reed is get him on the next Greyhound out of Philadelphia.
Yeah, it seems like it seems like a lot of people think that he's going to be a buyout candidate. There really is a lot of depth on the wing, and it's almost crowded too much. But they bring Patrick up if he's doing well, like mid-season in the AHL, or if he really impresses in training camp, he might even start. Maybe at the fourth line and then move him up. I don't think Matt Reed should be in the lineup next year. I don't foresee Hextall re-signing him, especially since they're going with a lot of young guys and working their way up. Then we also got to wonder what's going to happen in net as well. We talked about Brian Elliott, who, by the way, was solid in the second half last year. And we'll see what Anthony Stolarz can do. He had a little bit of a setback, too. And the Flyers also have prospect Carter Hart, who made his World Junior Summer Showcase debut on Tuesday night, and he did very well. He is 18 years old, and he seems in the next few years he'll make his rounds through the minors, and then maybe if he impresses, he can make the hurdle past some of these other guys who are kind of on the bubble here. But in that, Carter Hart had a shutout, 19 shots faced. So we'll see what happens with that. And they had that trial at the Isle I mentioned last time. They did that. They have talked about all of the prospects and Mike Vecchione, who's been really solid. So I think this season we mentioned that there's prospects for the playoffs. Obviously, we won't know for another month or two, or I'm sorry, another month and a half until we see the lineups and what Hextall wants to do as far as who's going to go in the fourth line, if Patrick's going to start, if he's going to be in the checking line. There's Dave Hextall should be the coach. Got rid of LaViolette 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, after that 0-3 start, and then made the playoffs the next year, and then they've missed two out of the past three seasons. What are your impressions on Dave Hextall? If they get a poor start to the season, like maybe 20 games in, do you think Hextall should be canned, or do you think he deserves a couple more seasons to kind of evaluate him as a coach?
I think if, you know, you give him halfway through the year and you're well under 500, like, you know, how they played the second half of the year, I think he's going to get fired. And one guy who really speaks to me when you're looking for, you know, an interim head coach is Ian LaPerriere. Right now he's one of the Flyers' assistant coaches. And, you know, a guy like him, you know, wasn't a great scorer. You know, wasn't great on the stats-wise, but he has a lot of hockey knowledge. And usually, you know, the coaches that aren't the best at playing but have a lot of knowledge of the game are usually the better coaches. So, I mean, if they were to go another direction in the coaching staff, I think they would go with Ian LaPerriere as a coach.
Well, you mentioned LaPerriere, who I actually like as well. They actually, on June 7th, the Flyers hired Erie Otters head coach Chris Knobloch to fill their open assistant coaching position vacancy. And this was reported by the Flyers and a couple other sources. And a lot of people around the league were looking towards hiring as an assistant coach for Knobloch, and that reportedly he's a hot commodity, and maybe he could even take over Hextall and briefly, long-term, if he were to be fired. And they mentioned that not only did he have success at the junior level with Erie, but Ron Hextall said that he's coached a lot of good young offensive gifted players, and that according to Hextall, we feel that he's a really good fit with our group, and that we're excited to have him in our organization. And they fired. That's because they fired assistant coach Joe Mullen on April 13th, so they hadn't had an assistant coach for a couple months. And that was in addition to not only LaPerriere, but assistant coach Gordon Murphy, who will retain assistant coach for this year. And then we're not going to know whether or not any of those guys are going to be still here if Hextall were to leave. So we'll see. There's not really not much other news in terms of the Flyers. We have preseason coming up, like we mentioned, in a little over a month. And then we'll kind of know from there who's going to make the big club, who's going to be on the fourth line. We pretty much know, bar a huge injury, who's going to be in the top line, where Simmons is going to be. I think you mentioned Couturier is going to stay on the third line with Reed, and we'll kind of go from there. And the goaltending should be kind of interesting as well. I'm interested to see what Ken Elliott can bring, because he did so well over the end of the season. Actually, I want to bring that up. Brian Elliott, almost soon after he was they brought here, he was on the phone on the radio station, I believe on WIP, and not only was he successful with Calgary last year, he was 26-18-3, although his goal against average was a little bit poor, 2.55. He finished the season really solid, 18-6-1. In his last 25 games with the 2.22 goals against average. That was since January 26th up until the season finale. And he also had a save percentage of .925 in that time span. So hopefully we can get kind of leaning up to this season and onward and see what we can do. So kind of head into some Eagles news. And see what they can do. The preseason is coming up. And then we talked about some of the recent signings. We'll get to, since we mentioned the wide receivers on one of the last shows, I wanted to get kind of start off on a bad note and then move forward. Nelson Aguilar, I'm not sure what his role will be for next season. I'll ask your opinion on that in a second, but last December, right around the season ended, Pro Football Focus ranked Aguilar as not only the worst right wide receiver in the league, but the worst entire player in the NFL. And they noted that last week 15 at Baltimore in a 27-26 loss, Aguilar was targeted four times. He dropped the ball twice, and his only catch was for 9 yards. And the six-game span last year, he only had 9 catches, 61 yards, and then he was targeted on 29 occasions within that time span. And in 62 targets last year, he had two TDs, 7 drops, 36 catches, you know, and 364 yards. He possibly could be a kick returner last year since they have Scholes primarily as a punt returner. What do you see, Marcus Aguilar's role for next season? What do you foresee him accomplishing, if anything?
Well, I think Aguilar's going to be, obviously, have a better year. It's kind of hard to have a worse year than he has had the last 2 years. But what I've heard reports are that they're going to use him in the slot along with Jordan Matthews. They're going to have Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffrey on the outside, and the slot positions on each side will be Jordan Matthews and Nelson Aguilar. Now, with that being said, you're going to get a lot of double coverage on Jeffrey, which is going to lead to one-on-one coverage with Torrey Smith. And then you're going to have a lot of coverage and spies on, you know, the tight end position, because the Eagles are, you know, they're pretty good at tight ends. And so it leaves Jordan Matthews and Aguilar open across the middle. Now, Aguilar, we all know he's fast. We all know he's got exceptional route running. But the last years, he's had a case of the drops. So if he could fix his whatever's going on inside of him mentally for him to drop the ball all the time, then he'll be a solid receiver this year for our offense.
So you see him on, he could be the primary kick returner for the team, because I think that would be the only role for him. I mean, obviously we know with all the territory, but the drops, you can ill afford those, to have those just as much on special teams. But I don't know what would better suit him, just to be a backup and maybe get a few yards in a game when somebody's being double-teamed. As you mentioned, we have so much depth, and other reporters are reporting too. We have so much depth at the wide receiver position. Does he stay there, or do you think they should just put him on kick return duties?
I think they should keep that receiver. I mean, besides, you know, after Aguilar, you still got, you know, Matt Collins. You still got the guy Johnson, you know. So you don't really have that much depth after Aguilar. So I think, you know, he'll be a solid number four receiver, and you know, I'm just kind of excited to see what he does here. I think he could be the X factor if he's well.
Yeah. Don't forget they're going to be throwing the ball a lot of times to to Zach Ertz as well. So that makes it even worse for Aguilar if he's trying to get as much action as possible. And obviously we're one week into training camp. We're trying to. There's a lot of question marks. So Aguilar is not really the biggest question mark, because we already know how inefficient he can be, how he has been. So I'm very fortunate for the Eagles to have so much depth, because over the years we've been very short at the various positions. So there's no really any problems there, even at tight end either. And we arguably had the best offensive line in football. Actually, that's another thing, Pro Football Focus. Surprisingly, in this past, earlier this offseason, they ranked the Eagles as the NFL's best offensive line, somehow over Dallas, who I thought we had a better line. But I think the offense is going to be huge this year. And actually segueing that into Carson Wentz last year, rookie year, had 16 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, 6.2 yards per pass attempt, a completion percentage of 62.4, a quarterback rating of 79.3. He was the NFC Week 3 Offensive Player of the Week, home versus Pittsburgh. And his grade for the year, according to Pro Football Focus, was 78.3. Mark, what was your impression of his rookie season? Because obviously he had that huge start, and I think the bye week screwed him up. And then that last game versus Dallas rested the majority of their starters. Do you think he makes a big leap this year, or is it kind of small steps?
I think he makes a huge leap this year. He had he didn't have any weapons last year. He didn't really have a consistent running back. He didn't have any consistent receivers. Zach Ertz came to life a couple of last games of the season. He had a battered offensive line. So, you know, with everything against him, I thought he did pretty well. Now, don't forget, with Lane Johnson in the lineup, the Eagles went 6-1 this year.
Yeah.
So, that's something to think of when people, you know, kind of grade Carson Wentz and go, oh, he did so bad, you know, 7-9, 14 interceptions. But think about it, you know. You can see the huge difference when Lane Johnson was in the lineup and when he was not in the lineup.
Yeah, and he has some good slot receivers. Jordan Matthews, I think he can make some improvements too. I really like his speed off. Is, like you mentioned, as a spot receiver, according to the team's website. We also forgot, I don't think either of us mentioned Bryce Treggs, who could be in as a backup to Smith. And then there's also Matt Collins as well. There's some rookies thrown in there as well, Shelton Gibson. And they have a lot of depth there. So also on Wentz, last year he led the league in fumbles, so I would like him to tighten that up. And last year, I was kind of impressed, and then I figured at times he's a rookie too, because in the fourth quarter last year he had a 69.2 passer rating and then 5.6 yards per attempt. Do you think there's going to be a lot of problems with him in the second half of games if the team is down by like 10 or 14 points?
No, I don't think so at all. I think he's going to be fine actually this year. A lot of people think he might be, not this year, but maybe next year, top five quarterback.
Just because of the amount of weapons he has plus the amount of growth.
Yeah, the amount of growth, the intangibles he has, the student mentality, the work ethic, along with the weapons, you know, it's going to be a scary Carson Wentz and a scary offense.
We also want to mention that the Eagles hired and Wentz agreed in the offseason to work with the specialist to work on his arm angle. The specialist is renowned all throughout football. At one point, I believe, years ago, he was even reported as working with Tom Brady. So, you know, there were times where I saw a lot of throws that could have been made that were sailed. I'm not worried about his arm strength at all. I'm worried about the accuracy. If he can tighten that up, like 62-63%, we don't need, you know, we don't need a huge amount of throws for him in terms of, like, I don't think we need 35, 40 throws a game. But seeing as how we're going to get rid of Ryan Matthews, it looks like, and Sproles is retiring, I'm wondering what the long-term depth chart is going to be on the field at running back position. So I don't know. We'll see about that. So did we discussed that last time too. You were thinking Wentz is going to have right around 30 touchdown passes. I said right around like 24, 25. The final three games last year, he was 2-1, although he did play Dallas's backups. He had two interceptions, 72.7 QBR. And then the first three games last year, he was undefeated and had a 103.8 QBR. And people that wanted to mention that two of those games were versus losing teams in Chicago and Cleveland, but they also played a team that made the playoffs at home versus Pittsburgh. So that was not necessarily a slouch there. So is there any player that you're looking forward to most this year besides Wentz and besides the two new receivers we signed?
I'm really looking forward to see how Wendell Smallwood does in the second year. I heard he looked really good in camp, and he's, you know, really pushing harder than he's ever pushed before.
Yeah, I really like his speed outside the lines. Smallwood, and I think that he's going to kind of – the fact that he's not going to be getting all the reps is going to be in his favor. Also, one thing of note, this was a few days ago, Inquirer reporter Jeff McClain reported that according to Doug Peterson, rookie cornerback Randall Goforth, who was working toward the roster spot in training camp, he had torn his ACL and his season is over officially. So, fortunately for him. So, somebody will try to take that corner position, which is ranked as one of the worst in football. What do you make of the corners this year? Because I think the defensive line is probably going to be one of the best. Actually, I want to say top three best in football. Then I see our corners. Malcolm Jenkins we have, but I don't see the Malcolm Jenkins from a few years ago. We have Jalen Mills, Rodney McLeod, as I mentioned, Jenkins. And then we have Jalen Watkins backing him up. We also have Chris Maragos. And then we also have a couple other guys, rookies, that are also going for spots, including Sidney Jones and Rasul Douglas, who's trying to get at the right cornerback position. So what are your thoughts on our secondary? Because I know we talked about this a couple shows ago when we were discussing how balanced the defensive line is with Cox and with Brandon Graham and with some of the other talent that we had last year. And by the way, I thought Brandon Graham was best pass rushers come last year. Especially he did well in the 4-3 under Jim Schwartz. I thought he should have made the Pro Bowl. But what were your thoughts and what's your predictions for the corners this year in the secondary? Do you think that'll lose us a few games, or do you think the defensive line is going to be so solid that we won't have to worry too much about it?
No, I think it's going to be a problem. You know, if you look back at the Monday Night Football game against Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers did short passes all game. Literally one step drop back and threw the ball, same cross pass. So I think teams are going to start doing that. You know, the Eagles have a good pass rush and just, you know, slash and slice through your defense. But I think the middle of the field will be fine because, you know, Malcolm Jenkins and Rodney McLeod are, you know, top five in safety teams in the league. So they'll cover the whole middle. But the outside, you might get burnt on a, you know, daily occasion, being that Dez Bryant is in our division. Terrell Pryor now is in our division. Jordan Reed, we got Jason Witten still. Odell Beckham, Brandon Marshall. You know, all these top receivers are in division, and, you know, we don't have top cornerbacks, so it's going to be hard for us to cover them.
Yeah, we were facing a lot of top-tier slot receivers, as you mentioned. And actually, speaking of the division, Bleacher Report over the last day or so, they just posted their odds for each division's winners and ranks in terms of odds for which team's going to finish 1-4. And they posted the NFC East, and they have both the Giants and Cowboys set to be the in the running for the division lead at 2-1. They have Washington's odds to win the division as 4-1, and they have the Eagles at 7-1. What are your thoughts? Do you think the Eagles will finish in dead last and kind of improve in a few years once they get to know some of their new receivers and once Wentz settles in? Or do you think it's not as much of an immediate fix and that they'll be, I think you said 10-6 this year, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so how do you see the rest of the division playing out?
Well, I see I see Washington being number four with like a 5-11 record. I see the Cowboys. You know, it's kind of hard to, you know, get better every year when you're when you had such a good year last year, especially the Patriots. I see the Cowboys going 8-8 or 9-7. I see the Eagles going 10-6, and I see the Giants going either 11-5 or 12-4.
Yeah, the problem is the Giants were having some problems on defense. Their offense is so good, but I think either towards the latter half or the first half of the season, they were up there in terms of sacks allowed. But there's also a huge issue to tackle for Dallas. Some huge news that's kind of lingering that Ezekiel Elliott for Dallas's status is uncertain. It's kind of problematic because according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, Elliott, who led the league last year in rushing, he could potentially face a short suspension after the NFL's investigation into a domestic violence dispute with him. So no one really, not only in Dallas but outside of Dallas, knows what's going to happen to him this year. Also, the best in the league was posting as the Dallas Cowboys offensive line was ranked the second best. Doug Free was off the books now, so the offensive line took a hit basically because he retired, and O'Leary departure of the team in free agency. So they got Tyron Smith now, Travis Frederick, and Zach Martin, who I think is probably one of the best in the league. I think Martin's probably the best at his position. But the offensive line is still going to be strong for Dallas, but not as effective. Still have Leo Collins and Jonathan Cooper, but they haven't been proven to be effective in the twos place yet. So. It's kind of interesting because you mentioned Dallas and the Giants because I talked to somebody else about this, and it's really weird that the NFC East, they haven't had a consecutive division winner since 2004. The Eagles won the division from 2001 to 2004, and since then, all four teams have switched off. So you see Dallas, and then the Giants won in the division, or the Giants won in the division?
I see the Giants won in the division.
Yeah. Well, it seems like they're the most likely candidate because of Dallas's hit on the offensive line and Elliott's uncertainty as far as whether or not he'll be suspended. We'll see what happens with that. But I don't know. It'll be kind of interesting. I'm looking forward to the season, what it can bring, but we'll kind of see how the season plays along. So we'll get into a little bit of Phillies before we head out. The there was a little bit of news, a little bit startling as well recently. A couple days ago, potential Hall of Famer, former Philly and former Red, baseball legend Pete Rose was accused of having sex with a minor in the 1970s. So he was on the ballot of the Hall of Fame back in the 90s for 3 years, and didn't get elected all 3 years. And then after 5% off the ballot, it was kicked off the ballot. His best percentage on the ballot to be elected in was 9.5%. And many were talking over the years about whether or not he was going to be brought in and gotten back in and into the Hall of Fame and what was going to be happening. And there was a whole lot going on. But now, as he was expected to be on the Phillies Wall of Fame, nearly 30 years after all the stuff's going on with his career when he was in the prime as a Red. He was there was all these allegations going on, and the guy who wrote his book that kind of nailed him on his allegations of gambling when he was a Reds manager for 5 years in the 80s, whose name is Michael Sokolov, quoted that after these allegations were posted against Rose, said that, "I don't think Pete has much of a chance now to get in the Hall of Fame, but whatever his chances were, the allegations will certainly further diminish them." So do you see Pete Rose ever getting in the Hall of Fame? Because he had a strong year with the Phillies for 5 years. I don't think he was necessary in terms of worthy of getting into the Phillies Wall of Fame, although this seems like the ballot for the Wall of Fame nowadays is pretty easy, considering Jim Thome is up there. But what are your thoughts on Pete Rose? Because he had this gambling controversy for 30 years now, and then there's these accusations of him bringing 12 to 14 year old girls to spring training when he was with the Reds. What are your thoughts on not only his chances of getting in the Hall of Fame, but all these allegations going on against him recently?
Well, I think it's disgusting, actually. You know, he actually admitted to it, to the allegations. He actually, you know, when he got interviewed about it recently, and what he said was in the interview that he thought that the girl was 16, meaning that he was still all right to have sex with the girl, but it's not, you know, that's disgusting. So I think his name is just tarnished now for life. He'll never get in the Hall of Fame. He actually got, the Phillies were, you know, set to induct him this weekend or this week or some point in their Hall of Fame, but they actually just backed out today. But, so they're not going to honor him anymore, which is right. I don't think they should honor him. But here's my thing about this, too. You know, I'm not trying to take anything, you know, condone this at all, but, you know, if someone really cared, why wouldn't they say this back in the 70s when it happened versus when, you know, he's starting to get his name back out there now? I mean, unless someone has some personal vendetta against him, they want to ruin his life.
Yeah, I agree with that. People kind of, it's kind of interesting timing, and I don't think it was brought up at this time on accident, and obviously that doesn't excuse his behavior. I hadn't realized that he had came forth about it and mentioned that it was a 16-year-old. But earlier at noon this afternoon on the Phillies Twitter page, they posted a tweet and released a link that Rose will not participate, and then he released a statement after a press release that, according to him, "Well, I'm truly honored that the Phillies fans voted for me to be this year's Wall of Fame inductee. I'm concerned that other matters will overshadow the goodwill associated with Alumni Weekend, and I agree with the Phillies' decision not to participate." Rose is 76 and was with the Phillies for 5 years, had a .291 batting average, made the All-Star team 4 out of 5 years, had a one season where he was in the top 10 in MVP voting, and he helped propel the team to the 1980 and first team's World Series win. So I think he played a part, but I'm not sure if he was necessarily worthy in the first place, and this kind of tops it off. So we'll get into some Sixers next time. I know we got more than the Flyers than I expected to. So next time we'll get into some Sixers. Maybe when the Eagles start up the on the preseason, we'll get some into that. And I know they're set to play Green Bay. And we'll kind of go from there. If any more breaking news, unfortunately, you know, for the victims of this Miss Rose allegations, but hopefully nothing more is to come of it. So thanks for coming on, Mark. We'll pick up next time where we left off.
Sounds good, Kyle. Thank you.